Going back years now, I have had it. I think my first pylon was back about 7 years ago. I criticised somebody for drinking excess alcohol on Optrans, and there was a pylon that went on for 3 days then. But it has occurred for me on a fairly regular basis, and I rarely speak about this, but because I have a job as a columnist and a broadcaster where I don't just report, Shane, as you know, we give opinion here on this show, I've had it over and over again. And it seems to me that the way the online mob works is because I do think that it likes to and it wants to bully, it wants to intimidate, and sometimes those that are within that mob are actually, I suspect, scared of it coming for them, so they join in. But the mob like to go for what they see as acceptable targets, and those targets are often women in the public eye or certain politicians, and they're all seen as fair game. But once you are an acceptable target, people like myself, the mob has a need to attack. So you're an acceptable target, they'll go for you. And I think that sort of feeds their need to attack, but also I think people are kind of glad that it isn't coming for them. So you're safe if you're within that mob. So I'll be very honest, I've had death threats, I've had deliberate lies and smears told about me that were absolutely untrue. I've had fairly vicious insults. I've been defamed over and over again. I have trended on Twitter ahead of the late late on a Friday night because drunk Twitter is baring what I would describe as its generally fairly cowardly teeth. My kids have seen it. My kids have seen lies. They've seen threats. The rest of my family and friends have seen it too. And the kind of joke is that the people who are screaming at you online and, you know, expressing their outrage, they actually believe themselves to have some kind of, generally speaking, I think, some kind of high moral ground. So you're out there just doing your job in the media. Your job is to comment on things. And they are there screaming about, you know, how despicable you are for literally doing your job and insulting you. And I think that they think that they believe what they're saying, to be honest. And I think they come with their digital pitchforks, and you and I have spoken about that before. I suspect they don't even recognise in themselves that they are a mob and that they're feeding off each other. But that kind of group hate, that desire to ostracise, that desire to punish, to cast out, to cancel, it reminds me of nothing as much as sort of pulpit bashing in the past. And I think it is hate, truthfully, but it is hate that sees itself as virtuous, and I think it is a sanctimonious cruelty. And I think every generation has the type of person that leans into that. And, you know, we had the craw thumpers in the church in the past when I was young, and now that I am no longer young, we have the craw thumpers who are the woke. I left Twitter after 7 years because I realised that, to me, now I look at it as a shouting hate fest that does nothing good to or for anyone on there. And I'm not going to tell you, I'm not going to give them the satisfaction of saying how low you can feel when you face into that wall of hate. I don't want to. But what I would say is that lies and hate and viciousness, they have a way, in my view, over time, of consuming those who peddle them. And I think that's what we're going to see on social media, that's going to eat itself. And I think there is decency and there is cruelty, to be honest, in human nature. But I think social media has largely been colonised by the cruel. And I think there's a lot of bystanders there too, and I think they're watching what are happening, and some are excited by it and some are just glad it isn't coming for them. But for me, something needs to be done because it is bringing out the worst in human nature. Roy Greenslade, he's a member of Sinn Féin. He wrote about her. No one knew at the time that he was, as he now describes himself, a messenger for Sinn Féin. Did anyone brief Roy Greenslade before he wrote that article from the Sinn Féin party?
Well, no. And at the time, Roy wouldn't have been a member of Sinn Féin because...
He describes himself as a messenger for the party. And he was writing for Unfublocked under other names.
Yes, yeah, and I don't think there's anything new in what you're saying there, but I'm just making the point, to be a member of Sinn Féin, you have to live in Ireland. So no is the answer to your question. I have to say, anybody who has read Roy's journalism over the years would have been very clear as to his political views. I also have to say that he's certainly not unusual as a journalist in having a political view.
There was a distinct lack of transparency. People did not know that he was writing under pseudonyms in Unfublocked. People did not know how close his links were to Sinn Féin or the IRA. There was a lack of transparency that most journalists would suggest was unacceptable. And indeed, many journalistic groups have criticised him for all of this.
Well, be that as it may, and that might well be their view, from my stance and from how I regard the media here in Ireland, I think it's fair to say that lots of journalists have very clear political views. It's also fair to reflect that literally dozens of journalists have found themselves acting as government spokespersons and advisors, and in some cases, even election candidates and nominees to elected office. So that line between politics and journalism, of course, is very real, the intersection between those things. And I think any demands for transparency and clarity that might be made of Roy are, you know, need to be universally applied.
In fairness, Marilu, the Institute of Chartered Journalists have said we have to emphasise it is professionally incompatible for any journalist, let alone a national newspaper journalist, to lead a double life of propagating one side in an armed conflict with a fake identity at the same time. I mean, this is quite an interesting... can I ask you one more thing about this before we move on to other stuff? With regard to Roy Greenslade, who is now a member of Sinn Féin, do you have any any criticism of... are you happy to stand over his membership, given what he wrote about Maria Cahill at that time? He tried to undermine what she was saying and suggested that her, I'll quote him, that the programme makers were too willing to accept Cahill's story and did not point to countervailing evidence. This lack of balance resulted in Cahill's story being accepted. You have now accepted Cahill's story. So surely he is speaking differently to you.
Ciara, Roy can write for himself and speak for himself. And any questions that there are around his journalism, what he said, his views or his positions, he is more than able to answer for himself. He is, as you say, now a member of Sinn Féin. I know Roy. I also would have known Roy as a journalist, and like thousands, millions maybe of others would have read his work over the years. I don't think anyone was ever in any doubt as to his political views.
No, but the point being, Marilu, that a member of Sinn Féin has spoken about Maria Cahill in this way, it is widely accepted that what Maria Cahill has said, and you have accepted that what Maria Cahill has said, is true. And so what he has said about her, to undermine what she has said, is that acceptable as a member of the Sinn Féin party?
Whatever controversy there is between Roy and Maria Cahill, or between the paper in question and Maria Cahill, is for them to sort out, okay. Not for me.
Before we get into callers, I have something to say. And what I have to say is this, is first of all, the complaints that weren't upheld around things like it was full of sexual innuendo. Do you know what? I totally get that to most men, a vagina, and I'm going to say that word so many times today because I'm a bit irked, is a sexual thing. But do you know what? To the body that I live in and the body that 51% of the population live in, that is female, it's just a bit of our body. And in fairness, it does other things too. We give birth through it. We menstruate through it. It bleeds. It sits there. It does, you know... Like having an elbow, okay? So we have vaginas and they do stuff and it isn't all about sex. So suggesting that anything to do with the vagina is sexual, that's not the female perspective, okay? To me, what this says, and the reason that I am concerned about this, is that the only reason that this ad was taken down, and 84 complaints is not that many in a population of 6 odd million nearly, I don't really like the ASAI taking it down, is it's to do with shame. It's to do with shame about women's bodies. And let me say this, we have the lowest breastfeeding rates in the Western world because our boobs are sexualized. And even though they're actually designed to feed our babies, that's disgusting. We aren't allowed to have... This ad, by the way, goes out in the UK every day and no one cares. But here in Ireland, we can't talk about it because our vaginas are sexualised and we can't talk about having periods. In fact, the ASAI say that they don't like to have these kind of ads about tampons if there's going to be people under 18 looking at them. We get our periods at about the age of 11 or 12. Some girls get them at the age of 9. Are they not supposed to find out about them and think of them as normal for another 11 years? Like, what is this? What is this? And I don't know what to say about it other than it is an old anachronistic throwback in Ireland that we might be all liberal and we might repeal the eighth and we might vote for this, that and the bloody other, but there is an inherent shaming of women still in this country. And if that ad for tampons talking about putting a tampon into your vagina offends you, well, half of us are doing it all the time. I'm not wearing one at the moment, lads, but I wear one sometimes and I don't care. There is going to be more talk about periods. And the reason there's going to be more talk about periods today is that literally I'm sort of overwhelmed, actually, because thousands and thousands of you, and not just tens or hundreds, but thousands of you have gotten in touch with me and with News Talk since yesterday when we talked about the withdrawing of the Tampax ad. And I obviously was quite clear that I did not like it being withdrawn. And we were trying to think, because a huge amount of you agree, right? There's a huge tsunami of men and women out there who are going, this is ridiculous, what do we do? And we thought, how do we best harness that feeling? Because we'd like to do something with it, because I think that ad needs to be reinstated, and I think a lot of people agree. So we were talking about it here, and here's what I would like you to do. I would like you to send me tampons. Yep, that's what I would like you to do. Send me tampons here at News Talk. Our address is News Talk FM, Marconi House, Diggs Lane, Dublin 2. They will get to me. And what I will do is I will bring however many tampons you send, I will bring them to the ASAI, to the Advertising Standards Authority of Ireland, and I will show them that this is the protest, that people are sending tampons because they are unhappy. It goes on, right? Because what are the ASAI going to do? We'll donate the tampons afterwards to a period poverty charity. We would like to do that, and I think that's a really good thing to do. But we want to do something. We don't want to just sort of say, oh, that was very annoying and it shouldn't have happened, and then forget about it. Send me your tampons. Please send me your clean tampons, just to be very clear. Send me your unused tampons, boxes of tampons or individual wrapped tampons. I don't care, because you can put an individual one into an envelope or whatever. Send them to us. We will donate them. They will get to good use, maybe with one of the homeless charities or one of the period poverty charities anyway. So that's a great thing. But we will bring them to the ASAI and we'll say, look, you made a mistake. That's what happened here. You made a mistake. 84 complaints is not enough to indicate widespread offence. And equally, you have to look at what people are being offended by. And if people are being offended by women's bodies, then that's an issue in itself.
So I was having a lovely stay in the hospital and kind of saying, this will be great. Now they'll maybe do a little operation on my back. And he came in the following morning. I know the symptoms. He came in the following morning with a nurse and he closed the door. And he said, Joan, it's not good news. He said, you have stage 4 breast cancer. He said, there's no cure.
And this had spread to your bones? This had metastasized to the bones, Joan?
It was in my lungs. It was in my lungs. Okay. They had to drain my lungs. There was fluid on my lungs because they asked me when I checked in the previous day, had I not finished my antibiotic? And I said, I'm not on an antibiotic. And he said, but you have fluid on your lungs. And I said, well, I don't know. I said, I couldn't see anybody.
Okay.
And you can't tell if you have fluid on your lungs over the phone.
No, of course. So Joan, unfortunately, you have metastatic breast cancer.
Yes,
now,
I have.
And
yes, I have.
Do you feel that you were let down in that you obviously had symptoms from December but didn't get any kind of an answer for several months after that?
Yes, I do feel I was let down. And it's a surprise to me, Ciara, because I've gone through cancer before. And it was like this comforting blanket that they put around you from the get-go, from the day I found the lump to the day I went to the 3-in-1 investigation, to the day they took my breast off. I never felt once that I was outside of this caring group that I was in until I was popped out the door about 9 months later and said, we'll see you every couple of months. Hope your hair grows. You know, a funny little ring-the-bell moment.
Of course. Joan, would you say that how you got treated by the healthcare system during the pandemic was vastly different to how you got treated that first time 5 years ago?
I'd say there was no comparison. The only aim that they had was to keep me outside the door. I wasn't important enough. I didn't have COVID. I felt they let cancer get to me and they never stopped it. They could have helped me. I'm not saying I would have changed the diagnosis. I don't know. You know, but at least at the moment here, I'm with palliative care. They're looking after my medication. They're trying to make sure that I have as little pain as I have. But I've gone through agony since November. You know, I'm only 63.
Yeah.
You know, and I do. I feel very badly let down. And I just feel the people that made the decisions to do this for cancer care are going to, maybe not me, maybe not in the next couple of months, but they're going to have a tsunami of cases.
Yeah, we've talked about that already on the programme, and there has been, we believe, thousands of cases missed indeed. Look, Joan, we wish you well and we wish you the best of luck and care with all of this. I'm sure it's a real worry to you and to your family as well. And
it's my daughter, there's only the two of us, you know, so we're just coping as best that we can. And she's been absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
So she has, but no, we're managing ourselves. There's a bitterness there that we just can't get over.
Yeah, and you don't need that at this time because
I am trying to think positive, but I just feel
you should have seen me sooner. You should have looked at me. I am a previous cancer case. I didn't pop in out of the blue. I had stage 3 cancer 5 years ago.
Yeah.
We're out here, we're on our own, and we're not well enough to be fighting.
So I've taken off my bra, I've taken off my shirt, so I'm recording topless, and I'm about to put my breasts into a mammogram machine. And Aoife is smiling at me, encouraging me, going, it's not going to be too bad, and I'm trusting that she's telling me absolutely the truth.
Absolutely. Many women will find the mammogram uncomfortable, but the majority of women wouldn't find it any worse than that.
I'll tell you afterwards. So this is my first mammogram. I haven't had one previously.
Just going to bring it toward me a little step here, Kira. The position that we get your breast into is quite important. So you'll find the radiographers maybe doing a lot of movement with your breast, but it's in order to get the best possible image. So I'm just going to lean you forward here. If you turn your head toward me a little, that's it. You okay there?
Yeah.
I'm just going to make sure your shoulder is back a touch. And the compression is just going to come down onto the breast now. Well done.
So there is a bit of a pinch. There's a bit of a discomfort, but it's not pain as you would maybe know it.
Yeah.
And I would say, as somebody who has had sort of cervical smears, that it's not as bad as that.
I would tend to agree with you.
That must have been such a shock and such a blow.
Yeah, it was. I wasn't expecting. I really was shocked.
And did you know how seriously hurt he was at that stage?
I didn't. I was hoping it was a broken leg, a broken arm, something not that bad. But she told me, don't worry, your fiancé is alive.
Alive.
I don't think that... When she told me that, I thought, well, it must be really serious. The way, you know, I heard it, it sounded pretty bad. I don't know. The alive word was really heavy on me.
This is like, I'm sure, like a nightmare for you. And then you traveled to the hospital, and then
I went to the hospital. We got there. I was with my flatmate, one of Chago's best friends. We got there. They let us in. Someone came. The sergeant, the answer the phone, came to talk to me, saying that he was in an accident. It was a hit and run, and then I would be able to see him, but he was alive.
Okay. So he was still alive, so you saw him then. And then, very sadly, Thiago did pass away, and I can only imagine how you're feeling now.
Yeah. We had a couple of, over 24 hours to stay with him. Since the time that I found out about the accident, and the time that I went to the hospital, and the time he passed, we had a couple of hours. Okay. It was pretty bad, pretty heavy on me.
Okay.
I'm sure he was on him as well. And
can I ask you, Teresa? Yeah. When were you supposed to get married? I'm so sorry that this has happened to you. It's horrific. But when were you due to get married? He was only working for a delivery for 10 days. It's very shocking.
We didn't have a date yet, but we were planning on doing the legal marriage here this year until the end of the year. And then the big party, the church marriage, everything in the next couple of years, but the legal one will be this year.
Tragically, when Thiago was killed, the drivers fled the scene. It was a hit and run. And you're appealing for information as his fiancée, as a member of his family, who have been obviously devastated by this death. What would you like to say?
I'd just like to say that if you did it, please come forward. Be brave to do this. You were driving a car, you hit someone, and you left him there to die. Just please face what you did, come forward. And if you know something, it wasn't you, but you know something, if you have any information, please call the guards, please tell something. We are all looking for the person who did it. The guard is being unstoppable. They're doing everything. So please just come forward and tell what you did.